Wednesday, May 20th, Mailbag Show. Welcome to the Fantasy Football Today podcast. So we'll talk more about the Patriots, answer some keeper questions, Ryan Tannehill, DeAndre Hopkins, many, many more topics as we read your emails at fantasyfootball@cbsi.com. I'm Adam Azer. Hello, Dave and Jamie. What's up?
What's up, Adam? How are you, sir?
Hi, Adam.
Yeah, hi, Jamie. I love mailbag shows. They're my fave.
You know, speaking of mailbag, why don't you tell everybody where you're going tonight?
How is that related to a mailbag at all?
Well, why don't you just say where you're going?
No. I don't. I'm going.
We care about your personal life, Adam.
It's
we know
not
that
interesting.
In the hustle and bustle of New York City.
You know what you should do, Adam? Actually, give the address where you're going tonight and see how many people who listen to the show right away will meet you there.
The ironic thing is it is basically almost across the street from my apartment. It's so convenient that I could just fall out of bed and end up at this Bris that I'm going to tonight.
Ah, there it is.
To see,
I don't
want
to have any missteps out of Bris.
A little kid just...
Stay far away from the action.
Screaming in pain. I haven't been to one since I was a kid, so I don't really know what to expect.
You haven't been to one since yours?
No.
Is that what I'm kind of inferring?
No. I was probably like six the last time I went to one, but... I skipped Jamie's kids.
Yeah.
No.
The last
one
I went to was for Jamie's younger son, and he didn't even cry. He's tough.
Okay. Well, the bar has been
set. Tough kid.
Anyway, if you don't know what a Bris is, B-R-I-S, go look it up. So, Jamie, I know you have a quick announcement to make at the beginning of this show.
Yes. As you know, we've been talking about, the toy drive for, the room that's being dedicated in my mom's honor, and, amazingly enough, I know a few of you have reached out to me about wanting to donate. Two of our listeners actually have, and I reached out to a few toy companies, and I want to say thank you to Melissa and Doug, toy company that sent about 18 pieces of equipment or toys to the organization, the Mental Health Association of Southeast Florida. I really appreciate that. And then Adam Inman, one of our listeners, also, actually, one of our competitors as well works for Fantasy Football Locker Room. You can check out his work at fflockerroom.com. Adam sent a donation, and then Jeff Davis, another one of our listeners, generously enough, sent a donation as well. So beyond blown away by the support from you guys, and I truly, truly appreciate it. It's definitely going to a good cause. And again, if you guys want to continue to donate stuff, we'll take it for sure. You can just message me on Twitter at Jamie Eisenberg. And... another special donation.
Oh, Dave. Wow. It arrived.
Dave asked about pizza donations.
It's happening right here.
And a pizza,
thanks to
Sergio
man.
Gonzalez, was delivered to us kindly Ooh. Enough from Carl. I hope I pronounce his name right. Carl Buelow, B-U-E-L-O-W,
Carl.
Sent us a pizza.
Yeah, half pepperoni, half cheese. I didn't even know this was happening.
That's
Look at
great.
This. Look how beautiful that is.
Yep.
Very
yep.
successful pizza drive for Dave.
Dave.
Adam, you see this?
No, can you tilt it up a little bit? I still can't see it.
How about now?
Yeah, there it is. Oh, man, that looks good.
It's good.
It's from Adam and Dave's favorite place near our office, Poppy's. And Carl wanted to donate to Dave's pizza drive. So thank
Carl,
you, Carl.
So sweet.
I am having a burrito drive, by the way. After the Bris, so if anybody wants to donate to that, please do. Miami signed Ryan Tannehill to a 6-year, $96 million extension, and Jason Lockenfora has
can
some...
Eat a slice?
I'm on the podcast.
No one can eat. Carl wants to hear you eat a slice. He sent you a pizza. Eat a piece of pizza.
I'll eat it.
Just inhale it, Dave.
Come on. We'll talk Tannehill. Go ahead. You eat.
I want to talk about Tannehill.
You'll be swallowing by the time you're
I'm
done.
Not... I'm,
Jason Lockenfora has a very good breakdown of the contract on CBSSports.com. It's a low-risk contract for the Dolphins if Tannehill doesn't pan out in the next few years. So Tannehill's getting better every year. He finishes a top 10 quarterback last season.
Just to let you know, Dave's already dripped pizzas on his shirt.
And a clothing drive for Dave Richard as well is another shirt bites the dust.
One bite. It's all take.
One bite. Are you having the pepperoni or the cheese right now?
What do you think?
The pepperoni.
Yeah, you know me well.
So what do you think about Tannehill, Jamie? You can start with you.
I think it was a great situation for both parties. The Dolphins got, the guy they perceive as their franchise quarterback for essentially 3 years. That's where the money lies. And it's a smart investment because they didn't have to overpay for him. you know, he's been trending in the right direction. They've basically built this offense around him with the guys that they brought in from a receiving standpoint, you know, getting rid of Mike Wallace, who was a bad fit for what Tannehill does, bringing in Devontae Parker with the top 15 pick in the NFL draft, Jarvis Landry last year, Jordan Cameron, a big target who can, you know, do a little different things than what Charles Clay brought to the table, but a big target for the middle of the field if he can stay healthy. Offensive line, you know, assuming Brandon Albert's knee is okay, should be decent. And, you know, quality running game behind him with the addition of Jay Ajayi to help Lamar Miller. So it's a team that, you know, made a big investment on the defensive side with Ndamukong Suh, and now they have their quarterback locked up for 6 years if they want it, 3 years if they don't. And, you know, Tannehill got a nice raise. So, fantasy wise, I think he's still the same. You know, he's a borderline starter. Had some inconsistent moments last year, 7 games of 20 or more fantasy points, 7 games of 15 or less. The running has to be there for him to, you know, continue to help his value stay at a high level. But there's a lot to like about Tannehill if you want to wait for a quarterback.
And I believe I read somewhere that Tannehill and Sue will make up $40 million of cap space for the Dolphins next year.
Well, that makes sense.
Hopefully those guys stay healthy and contribute.
The one thing about Tannehill, Jamie, you mentioned the running, and he, between weeks 4 and 9, which was 5 games, there was a bye week in there, Tannehill rushed for between 35 and 49 yards every week. And then it just stopped. You know, he had one game where he had 21 rushing yards late in the year. And other than that, it was like 14, 15, 5. I mean, I don't know what you think you can depend on this year with Tannehill in terms of his rushing ability or how important you really think that is to his game.
I think it's important. I mean, it's not going to, you know, necessarily turn him from, you know, the number 10 fantasy quarterback in standard leagues, which he was, to Russell Wilson, who was a top, you know, 6 guy. I don't think he's going to jump that much, but I think it definitely, it enhances him. You know, he's not a Kaepernick or a, RG3 from a few years ago. You know, he's more of the Andrew Luck, Aaron Rodgers type, not that he's at that level, but just where the running gives him that little bit of an extra point or two on a week-to-week basis. You know, so if you're getting, you know, the good Tannehill rushing performances, which, you know, he had a couple games where he was over 30 yards, that's a great day. You know, you got to probably figure he's in the 15-yard range, you know, on a good week to just give you that extra point, or, you know, if he gets above 20, an extra point or two.
Yeah, remember last year there was that spread where he had at least 35 rushing yards in five straight games. And then all of a sudden he cooled it off and he had nothing really. He had one game with 21 rushing yards.
Right. Yeah.
And that was really it. Did just, score a rushing.
Just eat your pizza, Dave. I already said that.
Oh, you did? All right.
Whatever. Well, Dave, you have.
You distracted me. It's not fair.
No, it isn't fair. You guys both have Tannehill behind Eli Manning and Matthew Stafford. Jamie has Tannehill 13th, and Dave has him 12th. Jay Gruden likes running back Matt Jones, a rookie out of Florida. I was looking up Alfred Morris and his big play potential, and I was shocked to find out that over the last 3 years, all three of his seasons, he has either 9 or 10 carries of 20 or more yards in each of his first 3 seasons. That's Alfred Morris, and that ranks him in the top 5 every year. 1 year he was first, 1 year he was third, 1 year he was 5th in carries of 20 or more yards, which shocked me. But I couldn't find any stats for 30 or more yards, and I think there would be a huge drop-off at that point because he doesn't break a lot of rushes longer than, you know, 20 to 29 yards.
Did you know he had 2 catches good for 20 or more yards last year?
No. No, yeah. I didn't.
That's our boy, Alf.
The thing that you got to be concerned about with this news is that Alfred Morris does not play on passing downs. So if he's coming off the field for any running down situations, that crushes his value.
Well, yeah, I mean, it was kind of like a, we'll see what happens. We'll see what happens, you know, in training camp or whatever. How much of a threat do you think Matt Jones is? And quite frankly, I know Morris has put up good numbers, but I don't really think he's that good of a running back. And I feel like if Jones is, and they say that Jones is a lot better of a pass catcher than he was at the University of Florida, and he has a different skill set than what we saw, that Jones could usurp Alfred Morris. What do you think?
It's possible, and certainly he could start out in that passing downs role and kind of doing what Roy Helu did. That might be what Washington's looking for. But the trend that I see with Alfred Morris is down. Rookie year, 335 carries, 4.8 yards per carry. Sophomore year, 276 carries, 4.6 yards per carry. Last year, 265 carries, 4.1 yards per carry. He didn't miss a game in that time at all. So everything's trending in the wrong direction for my boy Alf. And I think if you get him, backing him up with Matt Jones would be a very smart idea.
The one thing that's good is that they did improve their offensive line this offseason. And so for a team that doesn't have a good quarterback situation, they would be smart to lean on their ground game to take pressure off of RG3, to take pressure off their defense. You know, Morris to me is still their most valuable offensive threat. Now, DeSean Jackson's clearly their biggest playmaker, but you know, if you get a good year from Alfred Morris, that'll really help things with that entire offense. I mean, you think about RG3 and how great he was as a rookie. A big reason why was they were able to run the ball so well.
And we've got a couple more notes before we get to the emails. Derek Carr may need surgery on his right finger. Just keep an eye on that. Right ring finger. And football is saved, everybody. The extra point is moving back from the 2-yard line to the 15-yard line.
Na 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 na.
You were actually really thrilled about this, Adam. I know we were talking about it, you know,
it's
before the show.
It's so dumb. It's so pointless. I mean, first of all, there's so well documented now that field goal kickers don't miss 32 or 33-yard field goals, and they can line up either 7 yards back or 8 yards back, depending on their preference. They can also choose a hash mark or center of the field. And they're hitting, like, last 3 years, they hit, like, 96% from this range. And honestly, I don't know anyone. I've never, and I hesitate to use the word never, but I don't think I've ever heard someone say anything bad about the extra point. I just don't think anyone cares.
Other than it's boring.
But who cares? Like, a 33-yard field goal is not going to be exciting either. And I think the biggest issue I have is your team's down by 7, drive the length of the field, tie the game with no time left. You should just tie the game. I mean, it should go to overtime. You shouldn't even have to worry about the extra point.
Like, especially if the weather's bad. And that's where I think this could potentially come into play, is there's always one or two games a year where it's the winds are 25 miles an hour and snow's coming from all over the place. And that could mess up the kickers.
This was a manufactured problem. This was not an issue.
There, one kicker on Twitter, I don't remember which one, thought of the offensive linemen and how they have to actually like play that down more seriously because the defense is going to come after the kick, whereas on extra points, the defense kind of loafed it.
That's interesting. Well, then.
Oops, a kicker taking up for the offensive line. I thought that was fun. By the way, what about the rule where if an offense tries a two-point conversion and the defense recovers the ball, they can return it for a touchdown?
Is it block kicks too?
Block.
Yeah.
I don't think it's blocked extra points.
I thought it was.
I thought everything was a live ball, but I'm not sure.
I know that was the proposal, was everything that's blocked.
We could look it up and see, but I know that, like,
conversion failed.
It should be.
Conversion fails. Yeah, I agree. I think it should. I think that could make things interesting.
Yeah, very rarely, but
right.
Sure.
It's just as rare as a kicker missing a 33-yard field goal.
Okay. Emails, shall we?
Sure.
Do it.
FantasyFootball@CBSI.com, and please put football podcast.
You forgot one big piece of news.
In the subject line. What is that?
Two kickers were cut.
I think I can name one of them.
Let's see.
Oh, man, I just saw it. Oh, Shane Graham.
Shane Graham is one.
And the other one has a New Orleans connection.
I don't know. Who is it?
Garrett Hartley.
Oh.
Cut by the Cleveland Browns.
Okay. Well, thank you.
So don't draft him yet, because that would be bad for your fantasy team.
All right, Adam, for the bonus round. Can you name the replacements on their respective teams?
Wait, I want to make a point here. Okay,
go ahead,
you say don't draft Garrett Hartley, but you know, you don't know how long he's going to be out. I think you can draft him in like the 13th round and then you take another kicker, replacement level kicker 3 rounds later. Sorry, just continuing the Brady debate. No, I cannot name their replacements. I know that the Saints have a couple of young guys. But I don't remember who they are.
Dustin Hopkins would be the kicker probably you'd want to consider now if you're drafting for the Saints.
Not to be confused with Dustin Diamond.
Or Dustin Hoffman, which is
definitely
where I thought you were going.
Yes, or DeAndre Hopkins. And
Johns Hopkins.
Travis Coons would be the kicker in Cleveland.
Max in a City of Dave's choice.
Let's go with Convoy, Ohio.
Yeah, nice. In every draft I've done, you know, he's really broken the mold from the Midwest thing.
Yeah, but I've made an effort.
Yeah,
just like saying picture versus pitcher.
You're doing good.
I try and correct my mistakes. I learned from my mistakes.
Well, Max from Ohio says, in every draft I've done so far, it seems like I end up with Justin Forsett. He isn't sexy, but should the safety of Forsett make him a lower-end number one back? Basically, Max wants to know why everybody's so down on Justin Forsett.
That would be you, Jamie, because I love the guy.
Yeah, I've changed my tune because I went into the NFL draft, you know, reading the reports. You know, Peter King had a report that the Ravens were definitely going to take Melvin Gordon if he fell to him there, and the thought was that they were going to look for an upgrade. Now, I'm blanking on the guy that they drafted.
Buck Allen.
You know, he's not an upgrade. You know, so he's a compliment. He's an upgrade over Taliaferro, maybe. So, you know, you're looking at where Forsett lies and the offense that he's going to play in with Mark Trestman, and clearly there's a lot to like. The concern would be is that, you know, it's very similar to Rashad Jennings, except he didn't change teams. A guy who had trouble staying healthy, had one, you know, kind of healthy season where he took advantage of it and played great, got paid, and now we'll see if he could stay healthy again. You know, so I think when you look at Forsett, his value is better in PPR leagues than it is in standard formats, because I do think you'll see Taliaferro and or Allen, or vice versa, get some work, you know, on especially near the goal line. But Forsett was great last year, and I think if you end up with him, you know, I wouldn't reach for him. You know, that's probably where we differ. I wouldn't reach for Forsett. If I get him around four, I'm happy. Before that, though, I think that's too soon.
You're kind of waiting. I maybe a lot of people were waiting for the wheels to fall off with Forsett. And Dave, I'll get your take on this. End of the year, week 15, 16 carries for 48 yards against Jacksonville. Then week 16, 10 carries for 19 yards at Houston.
Yeah, he slowed down toward the end of last year until...
Well, yeah, and then Cleveland. But Cleveland are the worst run defense in the NFL. He had 119 yards.
And
but
I think he played big in their playoff game.
That was what I was going to say. It was the game at New England where I said, well, maybe he's better. I liked him in fantasy, but I looked at him and was like, maybe he's actually a good player. Because he ran the ball really well at the Patriots.
It's a weird situation. And I think Jamie's comparison to Rashad Jennings is pretty much spot on. He's been... you know, bouncing around the league as a backup, and oh, wait a minute, in Seattle, maybe he can break out, and never, he had some opportunities, never really could do it. I'll say this about him. When he's been given opportunities to play, he's at least delivered strong rushing averages all but one time in his career, and his receiving averages are, that's fading a little bit, but the rushing average is still there. Here's why I really like Justin Forsett, because the opportunity is there. The offensive line is still good in Baltimore, and Mark Trestman leans on his running backs big time. And you can go back and see what he did with Matt Forte, what he did all the way back with Charlie Garner in Oakland and Garrison Hurst back in the day. Even in the CFL, he leans heavily on his running backs. So as long as Forsett stays healthy and is mildly effective, he's going to get a lot of work.
Okay, real quick, Forsett or Joique Bell?
Yeah, I still have Bell ranked higher.
Forsett.
I'm waiting to see what Joique Bell looks like in training camp before moving him down.
Corey from Cincinnati. Dear Philip, Duke, and Clive. Those are three of Dave's first six picks. why are you not
higher on
DeAndre Hopkins? Why are you not higher on DeAndre Hopkins?
That'd be you.
Yeah, I'm not a huge DeAndre Hopkins fan. I don't like how he was inconsistent last year. And that's when the Texans did have somebody opposite him in that offense, trying to take some pressure off of him. And that was with a pretty bad quarterback in Ryan Fitzpatrick. They haven't really upgraded at quarterback, and they definitely haven't upgraded at wide receiver. It's going to take a lot of work for Cecil Shorts, Nate Washington, Jalen Strong to step up and draw safety coverage away from DeAndre Hopkins. I think every defense is going to be honed in on him, and he doesn't have the quarterback sharp enough to get him the ball. And even if he did, he wasn't consistent last year. On top of all that, Bill O'Brien is the head coach of Houston, loves to run the football, loves to lean on the run. It's part of the reason why I'm pretty much the only person on the planet that would still give Arian Foster a first round grade in fantasy. That's a guy I'm not reaching for. Would I want DeAndre on my fantasy team? Definitely. But I wouldn't want to take him with a third-round pick, probably not even a fourth-round pick, because I just don't think he's going to have the opportunities. If he were on a different team, completely different story.
Rebuttal, Jamie?
Yeah, to me, he's the last of like the number one caliber receivers. Wow. I think he's going to get force-fed targets because of what Dave said, that there's not anybody significant opposite him. But I do think there's enough opposite. I like the receiving core as a whole better this year than it was last year because, look, Andre Johnson played well, but clearly he's not the guy that's going to, you know, his speed was, you know, missing. And I think Strong and Schwartz as a duo is better than Andre Johnson as a solo act last year. So I think they're going to struggle with, you know, Foster missing a game or two because that's typically what he's been, if not three or more. And I don't think their defense is going to hold up to the level that it was. We saw Clowney get hurt last year. Cushing has trouble staying healthy. I just see them, you know, chasing points. And Mallett's arm, if he's the guy, which I think he will help Hopkins immensely. He's entering his third season. He's been trending absolutely in the right direction when you look for third-year breakouts. And I think route tree improvement, there's 147 targets that are missing in that offense. They're not going to dramatically increase for Hopkins, but I would say...
What did he have last year in targets? Do you
remember? He was probably in the 120s, if I had a guess.
Okay.
I would say that he's probably going to be 150-plus. To me, that's...
127.
Huh?
127.
There you go. So I think 150 is easy for him to attain, if not closer to one, maybe 70. So he's going to see a lot of balls in his direction. He's an extremely talented guy. I think there's a ton of upside here for him.
All right.
You know, a big physical guy with good speed. I really like what DeAndre Hopkins brings to the table.
Okay.
There were 11 receivers last year that had at least 140 targets. 10 of the 11 had at least 104 fantasy points. One of them was Andre Johnson, who had 98. So, yeah, those should be more quality targets for Houston, however they get divvied up, because Andre is not there.
Next email is from Liam in a City of Dave's choice in New Zealand.
Oh, I was going to go international for Liam, but Auckland, New Zealand. Can we go with that?
Sure. Dear Tim, Mark.
Auckland.
Dear Tim, Mark, and Michael. I feel like I should know that.
Adam's future kids' names.
Cool. Vernon Davis is 1 year removed from being a top-tier tight end, yet in mock drafts I've done this year, he is coming off the board in the last couple of rounds or even undrafted. I know Davis was terrible last year, but that doesn't mean he's done. Hashtag contract year. If this continues, would it be wise to take a couple of late flyers on Vernon Davis, Jacob Tammy, Virgil Green, or Josh Hill to cover my tight end spot?
Did we ever get to the bottom of why Vernon Davis faded last year?
I think it was a combination of missing the entire offseason workout program, which, you know, I think put a bad taste in Harbaugh's mouth, in Kaepernick's mouth, and he was, from what it seemed, a little bit out of shape. So he's there all offseason, which I think will help him. But look, sometimes players just fall off a cliff. I mean, you know, you've seen it with Larry Fitzgerald, you've seen it with Andre Johnson potentially last year, Reggie Wayne. You know, Davis is in his early 30s, and he's a guy that was, you know, when he came out of college, considered one of the, you know, physical specimens at his position. You know, he even talked about, remember we spoke to him at the Super Bowl, and he said he thought he could play running back, you know, if he was asked to.
What do you think? Late round flyer or what?
Well, Josh Hill shouldn't be in that conversation.
But Hill's better.
I don't have a problem with it. You know, I just did a 20 round draft. He didn't get drafted, but I took Dwayne Allen in the 20th round. Because nobody wanted him, rightfully so. And so if you're going to decline to take two tight ends and you feel that strongly about Vernon Davis, he's going to be better than he was last year. I mean, you know, he had, I think it was, if I remember the stat correctly, he was among the leaders in red zone targets for tight ends 2 years ago, and I think he had two last year. So you have to assume if all this talk about Kaepernick being a better thrower is accurate, then he's in that conversation for being better, you know, and I wouldn't be surprised if he surprises some people. He'll be a good waiver wire addition.
All right, rank these three guys: Vernon Davis, Josh Hill, and Owen Daniels.
Oh, Davis is third. It's Hill, Daniels, Davis.
Yeah.
Next up, Steve in a city in western Massachusetts.
I don't know.
Dear J, Phil, and Cam, Modern Family.
I think I like it better when it's not so like
focused
on like a certain region of a certain state. We'll go Waltham, Massachusetts. I don't even know if that's east or west.
So here's the question from Steve in Waltham, Massachusetts. I know that the Brady horse has been beaten to death, but what do you think of the following strategy? Now, quick pause. We talked about taking Brady and then taking another replacement level quarterback later in our previous podcast. Here's what Steve says. I'm considering spending an early pick on a stud quarterback, Luck, Rodgers, Peyton Manning, and then drafting Brady later if he slips to, say, round 8 or 9. Once Brady returns, I would try and put together a trade package, including the stud quarterback I drafted, to upgrade in an area of need for me or target a team who needs quarterback help if my team is still in good shape.
I never like drafting for the sole purpose of trading down the line. Now, that said, if Brady does fall to round 8 or round 9, I understand the value there. So if you want to do it, you can, but don't do it for the intention of trading him. Do it for the intention of just seeing what happens with him, and if he comes back and he's hot, sure, someone will offer you something for him, but it's not going to be what you think. You're not going to get a great player for him. It might be more likely that he's just, you know, a good fantasy quarterback, 20 or 21 fantasy points per game, and a lot of other owners in the league won't really care because they'll get by with somebody getting 18 or 19 per game, or they'll stream quarterbacks.
Yeah, but he's not trying to trade Brady. He's trying to trade the other guy.
Oh.
He's trying to trade Rodgers or Luck.
I wouldn't do that either. I'd rather have Rodgers or Luck for the
entire season. I would say this. Dave's point is right. Don't draft a trade. But if he's the best player on the board in that particular spot, then absolutely take him. And then immediately when he comes back, if you're a Brady guy, which I'm sure you are being in the New England area, then you feel comfortable enough that he's going to be good. First off, look, depending on when your draft is, you should know when the suspension is going to be over. So you may not have the opportunity to draft Brady.
Are we still thinking it's 4 games?
No, there's no chance.
Right.
Whoa, why? Every report I've read said it's probably not going to get reduced.
That'd be a surprise to me.
That would be a surprise.
But can I, one more little tangent here. Roger Goodell should not be the arbitrator on this. Like, it's ridiculous.
Right.
He should be the arbitrator on point after attempts.
He should never, ever be the arbitrator. That has got to be one of the worst parts of the CBA for the players.
Just... Perhaps, but this is a pretty, this whole thing has been convoluted, and, you know, Robert Kraft says he's tired of all the rhetoric, and kudos for him for saying that. If the NFL is smart, they know that they've taken a beating from this. The very first game of the season is going to be without one of their best players.
Oh, well, he's clearly going to be suspended for at least 1 game.
Yeah, maybe.
Oh, he's missing that game for sure.
Maybe? Can you say definitively that that's going to be the
case?
Yes,
they're not reducing it 4 games.
Unless an arbitrator says this, a neutral arbitrator says this report was stupid.
But it's not going to be a neutral arbitrator. It's going to have to go to court.
Unless Goodell
wants to play
the hero.
Well, he could appoint Paul Tagliabue.
He got what he wanted.
Who did he play the hero for?
For every NFL fan that's not New England.
I still don't know how I feel about this.
A lot of Patriots fans still think that it's BS.
I don't know. I mean, Roger Goodell is coming out of this looking pretty good right now.
Certainly, I don't see that.
I don't see Roger Goodell looking good at all in any situation.
What's
he going to be known for when he retires down the line?
The extra
point. He's going to be known for all these wacky suspensions and for hugging draftees.
And the extra point. And mispronouncing Mariota.
Yeah,
and for making the NFL gazillion dollars,
he is, and himself, he is going to be known for that. But yeah,
does that get you into the Hall of Fame?
Being a commissioner.
Not that that's his goal, obviously.
Being a commissioner is tough. I feel like most fans don't like commissioners. You know, like I feel
the most powerful commissioner of all time, or still David Stern?
I'm pretty sure everybody likes Adam Silver in the NBA.
Right now, they do.
Right, and I think people did not like Paul Tagliabue, and Pete Rozelle was popular.
Yeah, I don't really remember with Tagliabue.
He didn't do a whole lot.
Kind of stayed out of the limelight.
Yeah, yeah.
That's probably the best way to go if you're a commissioner.
Yes.
Whereas like David Stern and just was a little too powerful, and people I don't think liked him that much. And well, I think we're off subject. So next question's from Travis from
Little Rock, Arkansas.
I have Tom Brady. Should I keep him or Brandon Marshall? I'm already keeping Adrian Peterson and Calvin Johnson. Brady or Marshall?
Wow, that's the all geriatric team right there. I would keep Brady over Marshall.
I would too.
Next question is from Brad in Muncie, Indiana. Sticking on the Tom Brady theme here. Dear Johnny, Angus, and Turl. Players with relatively short suspensions like Le'Veon Bell and Tom Brady should not be dropped in rankings at all, since the overall lost fantasy points with a season-long viewpoint is negligible. what he's basically trying to say is the one factor not being discussed is this. How many fantasy matchups are actually won by less than 5 points? And okay, what it was a very long email, and what Brad was saying is like you could get a replacement for Tom Brady who's going to score five fewer fantasy points than Brady. But are those five fantasy points really valuable? Because how many matchups are actually won by less than five? In our 12 team league,
when these guys come back from their suspensions, the games that they're going to play in will matter more to fantasy owners because they'll be near the playoffs, they'll be in the playoffs, and that's when you really want to have these guys.
It's
and I feel like we all learned a valuable lesson when Josh Gordon was suspended two games before the 2013 season.
And how, you say that was reversed last year when he was suspended?
Well, but he was suspended for so much longer that I think you had to take the suspension into account. And if a guy is missing four games plus a bye week like Brady would, if his suspension is upheld right now, then you can't overlook that either. But like the case of Le'Veon Bell, why do I still have him number one? Because I want that guy on my team. The guy's money. He gets double digits in fantasy points every single week. He can put up good fantasy numbers without necessarily scoring. He's going to be involved in Pittsburgh's offense. That offense is very good. I want that on my team. And I can get by without him for 2-3 weeks,
can
whatever
you?
The suspension ends up being.
Can you, though?
Yeah.
And here's the thing. It's like...
Because I can still draft more running backs.
But
it's just what I do.
Who are you going to draft him over? You know, how could you draft him over Eddie Lacy or Jamal Charles? There'd be a lot more guys for me.
It's just...
I think that three games is a bigger deal than... I think that's the big
crux. I also
don't
think it's going to end up being three.
Well... Assuming it is, I think three games is a pretty big deal.
To me, it's huge. And I'll tell you, the other thing that makes me nervous is we see with holdout running backs all the time. Now, he's going to be in part of their preseason and their training camp, which takes a little bit away. But he's not going to be with the team for 3 weeks. That's huge that he's not getting those reps. And for what it's worth, as bad of a guy as he is and as old as he is, D'Angelo Williams is the most talented backup that he's had. LeGarrette Blount didn't really fit there. We'll see if D'Angelo does, but that's going to take him off the field a couple times, especially if D'Angelo gets off to a good enough start in the first three games. So if it's 3 to 5 carries and maybe one or two, passing down possessions, Le'Veon loses a little bit to me. And I didn't drop him very far. He's still third, so I still think he's a great talent, and certainly that takes into account the suspension. But I'm nervous about him. I really am, because if this offense plays to the level that is, you see what they did in the draft. Get another receiver and Sammy Coates. No, they're just continuing to load up at those spots. Le'Veon's a huge part of it. But this is Ben Roethlisberger's offense. He's been great, since Todd Haley's taken over, for what that's worth. I don't think anybody thought that would happen. They're going to throw a ton. And Le'Veon is great. But he loses a little bit. That's why he dropped him.
The other part of that email was kind of interesting. It's sort of a weird thing in fantasy. It's like a guy could be worth two more fantasy points per week than someone else. And... be a much more valuable fantasy player, like if you're separated by 32 points in the rankings, that's a lot. It's kind of a hard to explain thing in fantasy. You know what I'm saying? Like, yeah, I know a lot of games aren't decided by 5 points, but getting a guy who's worth five more points per week is enormous.
Alshon Jeffrey was worth 167 fantasy points last season. He was the 12th best wide receiver if you subtract 34 points off of him, so about two per week. You've got Steve Smith, who was more of a low-end number two right. wide receiver. And really, his best numbers came in the first chunk of the season.
First 8 games.
Yeah, and once that was done and over with, he was a dud. He had two good games in the second half of the season.
All right, next email is from Jeremy. Greetings and salutations. Dynasty keeper question. Keep a starter at every position except for flex. Two running backs, two wide receivers. At what point do you decide, I got to rebuild? I have older players like Foster. I also have a player like Julio Jones. But do you keep going for it? And if things don't break right, I'm butchering this email. I'm going to start it over and just say, at what point in a dynasty league do you decide to rebuild and start trading older players like Arian Foster for younger, more upside guys or draft picks or something?
Well, I think it depends on, what you did the previous year, how you view your overall roster. Like, if you could turn Foster, let's just say, there's a team that has a chance to win now, and they say, wow, if I get Arian Foster, and I can take the certainty of Foster and maybe give up Carlos Hyde and TJ Yeldon. Let's say they drafted Yeldon in their dynasty draft. and I don't feel like I could win right now, that's a move I might make if I don't love my team. So I would turn Foster into two, you know, good young running backs. And the team that has, you know, the young running backs that doesn't feel like they're good enough to get him over the hump, you know, against another great team. That's the type of trade you want to make. But, you know, I mean, Foster still has one good year left. Maybe two, you know, but he's definitely nearing the end of it. You know, and a breakdown, as we've seen, could happen at any moment with that guy. So it's not a bad idea if you don't really love your team and love your roster to start unloading some of those guys, you know, the ones that are potential breakdown candidates.
And just, I know you guys are curious, Johnny, Angus, and Turl appear to be characters in an L. Ron Hubbard book called Battlefield Earth. I don't know if that's related to the movie Battlefield Earth. Have you ever seen that movie?
No.
I think it's widely considered one of the worst movies ever.
That's the Travolta movie?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it is truly bad. Ryan from Australia, riddle me this. I'm getting a strong feeling that Jamie is heading down the Bishop Sankey path with Amir Abdullah, a rookie coming into a backfield with a veteran lead back in place. Didn't work out too well for Sankey. What do you say about that, Jamie?
Well, I was definitely too high on Sankey last year. I don't think I'm in the same boat with Abdullah, you know, where I have him ranked or comparatively where I had Sankey ranked. You know, Sankey was in the Melvin Gordon conversation last year, you know, as the best rookie to get. You got to get him as a starter. I mean, you know, feel awful about that one. But Abdullah to me is, I'm probably taking him too high for myself, but I'm not necessarily advocating doing the same thing. I just, where he tends to fall to me in the drafts I've done, that's just the spot I tend to take him, which has been in that round five, round six swing. And I've been picking in the mock drafts that I've done either at the back end or the front end. So it's not like it's been in the middle, where if I was in the middle, I probably would take him in that 6-7 spot. But, to me, Abdullah's in the conversation to be one of the top five rookie running backs, and it's a very strong class. There's a lot of guys to like. I just think that he's going to have a significant role. And if you look at, take Joik Bell out of the equation. As much as Dave likes Joik Bell, as much as Joik Bell's been successful, Reggie Bush 2 years ago was a very good fantasy running back. The combination of Bush and Riddick last year was a top 24 running back. I'm not saying Amir Abdullah is a top 20 guy. To me, he's a top 30 guy. I have him ranked 25th. So, I don't feel like it's the same comparison. It may just sound that way because I'm high on him, but it's definitely not in that same conversation. Last year with Sankey, I was, you know, I fell for him as a starter, and I don't feel Abdullah right now as a starter.
Next up, Phil from Winnipeg. Hey, Jesse, Joey, and Danny. Those are also characters from Battlefield Earth. Why is everybody so down on Frank Gore? He's better than Ahmad Bradshaw, and Bradshaw was good last year. Am I crazy to think that Gore could flirt with 1,500 total yards and double-digit touchdowns? What am I missing?
Woo! You know, I don't think you'd be crazy if you had said 1,250, 1,300 total yards, and 8 or 9 touchdowns. I think he could get close to the numbers that you're thinking of. And yeah, I do think he does have a chance at 12 to 15 carries plus 3-4 catches per game, but I think that might be a ceiling, especially when it comes to the carries. I think Indianapolis will be cognizant of Gore and not wearing him down. Maybe that changes in December when they're fighting for, you know, a bye in the playoffs or maybe even the number one seed. I think Indianapolis is a contender for that. And I think Gore is going to help them on their way. I think he's a very good fit for them. And, you know, really the biggest factor of all is how much longer can he do it? So if you put him in the same conversation as other running backs that are going to be 1,500 total yards and double-digit touchdowns, well, now you're talking about Gore as a potential, as a guy who should be taken with a top 20 pick. And I don't quite see that with Frank Gore.
I was surprised that you guys have him behind, for Jamie, Jonathan Stewart, Latavius Murray. Dave has Murray, then Gore, then Jonathan Stewart. It's pretty close. Todd Gurley and TJ Yeldon are ahead of Gore for Jamie.
It almost feels like he's ranked low as protection just in case he doesn't fulfill high expectations.
He's old. And I mean, look, last year, if you just look at his numbers as a whole, here's the pro and con for Frank Gore. If they have somebody else, whoever it may be, Dan Heron, the kid they drafted or signed, what's his name?
Robinson.
And Vic Ballard coming back from, you know, all his ailments, if he's part of this at all. But somebody, if it's somebody else, look at Gore's numbers before Carlos Hyde got hurt and missed the last two games. they were okay. He had some good moments. And then Carlos Hyde missed the last two games, and Frank Gore was the old Frank Gore. So you're talking about a situation where if he's that guy for, you know, 16 games, I think Dave's right. I think they're going to protect him a little bit because this is a team that is Andrew Luck's team. This is a team that's gotten by. As good as Ahmad Bradshaw was, his success was catching the ball. He didn't do a ton of production carrying the ball. And so I don't think Frank Gore is catching, what did Bradshaw, like 6-7 receiving touchdowns in the first half of the year?
He went pretty nuts.
It was nuts. And
but Gore could end up with 3 touchdowns through the air over the course of 16 games.
16 games, yes. Over the course of 8 games like Bradshaw was before he started to get hurt? No. And the other part of it is they know that they're going to be in the playoffs. They're the best team in that division by far. They're one of the best teams in their conference. Patriots are now a little bit of a wounded duck. So they can kind of skate by with Frank Gore in that 12 to 15 carry range. You know, let's just say he maxes out on a week-to-week basis, 17, 18 touches. That's not going to be a dominant fantasy running back. That's going to be a good fantasy running back with what he should do in that offense. I don't know if he's going to be their clock killer, because why would you put him out there if you're up by 3 touchdowns late in the game? So there's some risk
involved. To get him 100 yards.
Huh?
To get him 100 yards.
But why?
Just so they throw him a cookie every now and then.
But he doesn't need that. He wants to win a Super Bowl. He doesn't need numbers at this point. His numbers are established. You know, he's proven himself in the league. It's not a young guy trying to get a contract. This is it for Frank Gore. He went to Indianapolis to win a ring. So numbers to him aren't going to matter. He doesn't want to be out there in the fourth quarter. I don't know about that.
I mean, I think most guys want to be on the field.
Yeah.
Yeah, but you know what, though? He wants to be on the field in December and January, not necessarily in September and October.
Thing is, we are acting like you say he's old, and you're not wrong, but we're acting like he's fallen apart, and he hasn't.
Right.
But that's the thing, though. At some point, these guys fall apart. And the last thing the Colts want to do is be stuck again with Dan Heron as a featured guy. He's good as a compliment. But they don't want him to be a feature guy. If they did, they wouldn't have gone out and signed Frank Gore.
I feel like touchdowns are going to make or break Frank Gore's season.
Well, he does have 1,200 total yards each of the last 2 years, and he's done it with 276 carries and 16 catches.
And he could score a lot of touchdowns.
255 carries.
Who's getting 11 catches. Who's getting goal line carries there, you know?
It's it. No, look, yeah, he's good. There's a reason why we still have him ranked as a top 24 guy. I just think, you know, based on the email of 1,500 and double digits.
That's a
could
lot.
He do it? Sure. He's in a great offense. He's still a good player. He's going to do the lion's share of what they want him to do if you just look at it on paper. But I also think this is a team that says, okay, when do we need to be our strongest? It's not September and October. They can win games in September and October with Dan Heron and Vic Ballard. They need to have Frank Gore at Frank Gore's level in November, December, and especially in January, when they're trying to keep Tom Brady off the field, which they couldn't do last year, especially with Jonas Gray and the way they were running the ball against them.
Does that ever happen? I'm seriously asking. I'm not questioning or challenging. Because I've heard that theory a lot on this podcast, but do teams ever save older players for later? Because I feel like they don't do, you know, but sports teams in general, they try to win.
Have you ever seen a week 17 football game?
That's the difference. I'm talking about, you know, do you save a guy early in the season so he's fresh later in the year? I personally can't think of a scenario where that has happened.
I'm not going to give you one, so, you know, your argument is definitely valid. I would say, ideally, if you ask Chuck Pagano, does he want Frank Gore to get 30 carries a game?
Well, you know, 30 is crazy.
Do you want him to get 20-plus carries a game through the first 4 weeks of the season? Or, ideally, do you want him in that 12 to 15 range, which is what Dave is saying?
Yeah.
So I think, just on paper, that's what they would want it. Now, again, you know, Pagano's a defensive guy. He's going to lean on his running game as much as he can. That's Pep Hamilton's, you know, history. But, offensively, they don't have to, you know, necessarily be a ground and pound type team because of their quarterback and their weapons. And secondarily, I just don't know if, you know, like, I don't see Gore saying like it was, you know, where he was fighting for his legacy and his role last year, and even the last couple of years, when they kept bringing in running back after running back after running back and basically pushing him out the door. He knows he's out the door now. He knows where his career stands.
Okay.
So Gore's still good. I mean, look, round four is a great, great spot to draft Frank Gore.
If he can stay healthy for 14 to 16 games.
You're going
to
be great.
1,300 yards and 8 touchdowns?
Yeah, I think so.
In that case, we got him ranked too low.
No. This is optimistic. Overly optimistic.
Jordan and Fargo, dear Ace, Ginger, and Nikki. This is a movie that I have not seen all of, and I regret that. I need to finish it. This is Casino.
It's a great movie.
Yeah, it's a good movie.
12-team PPR keeper league. I need some help on who to keep for my auction draft. $200 budget, I can only keep two. Charles for 60, AJ Green for 35, Kelvin Benjamin for 12, Jeremy Hill for 8, Travis Kelce for 1 in a $200 league. So keep two.
The last two for me.
Hill and Kelce, and then you can overspend or match the amounts. For Charles, he'll end up going for 60 or so. AJ Green, probably right around 35. Kelvin Benjamin's the only one you're throwing back that you're not going to get back at 12 bucks. You can make an argument that Benjamin and Hill are the two to keep, because that's 10% of your budget locked into two starters who should be just getting started on a great NFL career. What's the rebuy on Travis Kelce? Probably about 15 bucks.
No, more than that.
In a $200 league, you pay more. I wouldn't pay more than that for Travis Kelce. If it's a little more, then maybe like 17.
Let me ask you this.
Are you bidding $25 on Travis Kelce?
No, but I don't think he'd be in the 20
like range. Right around the $20 range for a tight end. Whereas Kelvin Benjamin might be even more.
30.
Yeah. Let me ask you this: do you ever
keep Benjamin and Hill and go after those other guys?
If you keep one guy like Jeremy Hill for an amazing value at $8, do you say, all right, well, I'm just going to spend the money on Jamal Charles now because I've got one amazing value? Because I think I'd be really tempted to start my team with Hill and Charles at a combined $68, which is pretty good in a $200 league. That's actually excellent.
I don't disagree with that, but then how are you going to feel if who's the guy that you value around Charles? I know Lacy is one, but who else?
Matt
Forte, maybe?
I don't really, other than Lacy and Charles to me. But fine,
okay,
let's just say
Lacy
most people would
55.
Say Peterson.
How are you going to feel?
I wouldn't care at all. Are you kidding? I wouldn't care. $5 difference?
I think the better way to go is getting Kelvin Benjamin and Jeremy Hill. You've got 180 bucks left. You can definitely withstand spending 60 of it on Charles in the auction.
That's a good point. That's a
And you
yeah,
might even get him for a little
better.
Less.
Yeah,
you might get a little
yeah, that's,
discount.
That's easy. You know, and the reason I would say keep Kelce, to me, he's easily the third best tight end based on what he did a year ago. He was the number 8 tight end with playing 50% of the snaps through the first 10 weeks of the season. Once they gave him 90% of the snaps over the final 7 weeks, he had double digits in fantasy points in 3 of those games. So when he was on the field a lot, which he was coming back from the knee injury a year ago, didn't have a full offseason, they've added some better weapons around him with Jeremy Maclin. For a buck, please, easy.
Yep. Next up, Nathan from Lethbridge, Alberta, Canada. 12-team,
nice.
2-quarterback, IDP league. Standard scoring with passing touchdowns worth 4 points. So 2 quarterbacks and IDP. First year of a 1-player keeper. OBJ or Amari Cooper a better long-term target, considering their ADP as well as their quarterback situation, with Carr being 10 years younger than Eli Manning? Obviously, this year you like Beckham better, but in a dynasty league where you're keeping a guy where he's drafted, who do you think you'd target, Odell Beckham or Amari Cooper?
Still Odell Beckham.
Beckham.
Also, which defensive rookies are likely to make a big impact in fantasy this year?
Well, not Dante Fowler, unfortunately.
What a shame.
And not you, D tackles aren't really that good in
right. D
IDP.
Tackles typically right, and I don't know if I would go with a cornerback, or a pass rusher.
I like the kid from Ole Miss that went to Houston.
Yeah, but I don't. What role does he end up playing?
Who knows? But I mean, he's a good player.
I like. I'm going to be accused of being a homer, but Denzel Perryman in San Diego.
No,
inside linebackers
yeah,
get a ton
yeah.
of tackles. How about Landon Collins with the Giants? Might get a lot of work there.
Oh, he'll definitely get a lot of work. Definitely get a lot of work.
McKinney is who you're talking about in Houston.
Yep.
Yeah, I mean, especially if Cushing gets hurt, which is kind of is a certainty at this point. Eric Kendricks, Minnesota. Mm-hmm. Like him a lot too.
And let's see. One more.
Stephon Anthony in New Orleans. He's going to play a lot.
Chris from New York. Hey, Spy, Bounty, and Deflate.
Oh, one more?
Yeah.
Randy Gregory.
Hmm. Okay. Spy, Bounty, and Deflate. Quick keeper question. Oh, wait, what about...
No Antonio in there.
What about... no Golden. What about... what was I saying? Oh, Shane Ray. You like Gregory better?
You know, when you talk about... Shane Ray's going to play linebacker, so he's not going to rack up the same type of points
He'll get the same type of points as Gregory, but Gregory is at a thinner position. So that's the only reason why.
All right, sorry. Here's the question from Chris.
Beasley too.
Yeah, but he's, again, outside linebacker.
Yeah, no, same like Ray.
Right.
Quick keeper question. 0.75 PPR league. I can keep one of these guys in the sixth round. Andrew Luck, Jeremy Hill, or Carlos Hyde?
Hill.
Yeah.
Guys, we are done with our mailbag show.
Enjoy your brisk tonight, Adam. Don't drink the grape juice.
Yes, and thank you again to the people who donated, and especially for the pizza donation, who I was told that Carl, again, Bulow, I think is how you pronounce it. I apologize, Carl.
Is that a real person?
Yes, B-U-E-L-O-W. Dave will be following you on Twitter by the end of the day.
Oh, that's not. I got his phone number.
Carl not only paid for the pizza, he also paid for the tip in advance. So he went all out.
Let's see what he did.
You can't say the word tip. I'm about to go to a bris. all right, guys. Thank you
so much.
That's
a nice tip. Holy cow.
Give me what percent?
More than 20%.
Ooh, very good. Very good.
No, nope, a little less.
Yeah, here's something that sort of changed. When I was a kid, I thought that if you order delivery and the guy brings you $20 worth of food or $50 worth of food, I think I was inclined to tip the same. But now, like, you can't do that. That's horrible.
Tip the same as what he...
$2 no matter what?
Or whatever it was, no matter what. Yeah, but now I tip it on a percentage of the cost of the food.
It's because you're an adult now.
Well, what's the...
Rat in Coral Springs,
what's the... I was just foolish. What was the correct etiquette there? You tip on percentage of the food or the... You know. It's the same service. It's just one guy bringing you food. Stop. No, I saw you nod your head in the agreement that you weren't going to answer to make things awkward. So,
I know is Carl's a very generous man. Thanks for the pizza.
All right,
be careful your door tonight.
Yeah, I'm ending it. Bye.
Stay away from the scissors.
Bye.